Revelation 10. There might appear to be a lot of symbology here to interpret. But don't forget that the vast majority of Christian believers down through the centuries have been illiterate. Literacy rates in the Roman Empire were not even 10%, and in Palestine they were a lot lower. And to the poor the gospel is preached. So the majority of people who have engaged with the gospel have not been literate, and that has a huge range of implications. They would not have argued about fine points of interpretation, as unfortunately we tend to, because they just didn't have the apparatus in front of them. They didn't have the text readily available. They had no way of delving into meanings of original words and so forth. And that's why the book of Revelation is extremely visual. People thought and processed far more in terms of visual imagery than in terms of words. And that's all they could do if they were illiterate. And we can rather miss the huge relevance of that, because we tend to look at each word and think where else it occurs and etc. And I think that's one reason why the body of Christ gets more and more divided as more and more knowledge becomes available, because knowledge puffs up and love builds up. So the very simple takeaway for the majority of Christians as they looked at them in their mind's eye at these images that they visions that are presented in Revelation is the simple thing that God wins. Jesus wins. That no matter how apparently awful, scary, and powerful is the opposition to him, and no matter how much we apparently suffer under its hands, he ultimately is in control. That is the simple outcome of these visions. So then, Revelation 10, you have this angel that appears that comes down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, with the rainbow upon his head, and his face as the sun, his feet as pillars of fire, verse 1. Well, the whole visual image here is of Jesus, because it clearly connects with the vision of Jesus that is presented in Revelation 1 and Revelation 5. He's clothed with a cloud. Well, Revelation 1, verse 7, behold, he comes with clouds. A cloud, of course, received the Lord out of their sight, and the angel said he will so come in like manner. His face was as the sun. Well, Revelation 1:16, his face was as the sun. His feet were as pillars of fire. Revelation 1, his feet were like to fine brass, as if they burned in a furnace. He cried with a loud voice as when a lion roars. Well, Revelation 5, the lion of the tribe of Judah has prevailed. And there was a rainbow upon his head. Well, the visual image of the throne room images of chapters 4 and 5 is that there was a lamb in the midst of the throne, and there was a rainbow round about the throne. So pretty clearly, even if this is an angel that represents Jesus, it could be Gabriel, the point is that effectively this is Jesus. And in verse 2, it says that he set his right foot upon the sea and his left foot upon the earth. Whatever was stood upon was, in that sense, under the control of the person who's standing upon it. And he stands there, one foot upon the sea, one foot upon the earth, with a little scroll in his hand, clearly the judge of all. Now, again, trying to think ourselves and feel ourselves into the position of illiterate folks, you come to chapter 13, there is the sea, and a beast arises out of the sea, and then in chapter 13, verse 11, another beast arises out of the earth. But chapter 10, verse 2 that we just read, Jesus is standing there with a scroll opened in his hand, clearly in control and in absolute judgment, with his right foot on the sea and his left foot upon the earth. But out of that sea and earth, there arise beasts. The visual impression would have been that he was so huge in the in the vision, that the beast that then arose from the sea and from the earth was just a little thing compared to him, with just one of his feet on all the sea and one of his feet upon all the earth, and then these little beasts, relatively speaking, crawl out. Now, of course, viewed close up, they were pretty awful and did terrible things to people. But the overall takeaway was that they were just tiny little moles appearing out of the earth, and Jesus was standing there in absolute control. And so I repeat, this is the overall impression that an illiterate reader going, or sorry, I mean an illiterate person just going on the visual images that are presented. Now, that's the overall impression that an illiterate average Christian would have taken away from all this, that Jesus is Lord, that he wins, and any opposition to him, awful and terrible as it might be in the short term and maybe leading to suffering and death, this is nothing compared to his overall mastery of heaven and earth. And that still comes down to us, because close up in the business of day-by-day life, you can fear that, oh, this is awful, this is terrible, I'm going to die. Maybe you will, and in fact you will die. We shall all die, unless the Lord comes in our lifetimes. And yet he is absolutely sovereign. He is absolutely in control. Absolutely. He is the Lord of history. He is the Prince of the Kings of the Earth right now, and even more so, of course, when he returns. So it's a huge comfort. It's a very simple comfort that he is absolutely powerful. It's one of the comforts of understanding that there is no devil in the commonly accepted understanding of some evil dragon that's got 50% of the power up in heaven, that's got a whole bunch of wicked angels following him, getting up to mischief in our lives down here on earth. No, he is sovereign. God is sovereign. And whatever evil there is around, he is absolutely in control of it. He is pulling all the strings in that sense. He is sovereign. And we are his beloved. And he is going to preserve us unto his kingdom.